Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
Culture.
Competition.
Architecture.
The dirt.
Drinking.
Eating.
Reading.
Thinking.
God, I love the dirt.
Let's not waste any more time.
Let's go straight to the pod.
Thank you all for being here.
We greatly appreciate the support.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
And I think this idea of like starting from the bottom and working your way up, you don't realize you're at the bottom when you're at the bottom. And I think that's a good thing. I prefer this idea of building a relationship with the viewer, your target audience, et cetera, saying no to like, no, we're not going to do that. Or no, that's cool. That's great. But like, we're not going to get caught up in that.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. My name is Walker Simas, and today I'm joined by Andrew Haynes, VP and Executive Creative Director at Fair Game. What is Fair Game? Fair Game is a team of five based in New York City, founded by Eric Mayville, who is the founder at Wonder Sauce, Ben Clymer, the founder at Hodinkee, the watch guy, and Masters champion Adam Scott, who I think we all know. The whole project, which is in the form of an app, is to connect people in the golf community. Andrew has this world-class eye for design and has the reps to prove it. I'm excited to share his story today, along with a conversation about branding, design, travel, and last but not least, how our great game is evolving. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Thank you for listening to the Tie Podcast. Andrew Haynes, thank you for being here today. Excited to talk with you.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Happy Wednesday, I believe, right? Is it Wednesday?
Happy Wednesday. Yeah. And you've I'm so jealous of the recording studio. I'm not sure where you are, but it's super aesthetic and nice, and I'm working on my setup here. But it's nice to see.
Yours looks good. I am on 28th Street in New York. I'm at WeWork in a conference room. So WeWork is our office at Fair Game. I have, they have this like all access pass. This is all very funny with WeWork because I think today or yesterday, there's an article that just posted that WeWork is apparently bankrupt. So who knows if I'm going to be able to walk in here anymore, but it's a great setup. I come in here all the time. And then the secret tip is, certain locations aren't as busy as other ones. So you can kind of like go in and squat in a conference room. So I am squatting in a conference room on the 17th floor, 28th Street between Madison and Park. So, you know, if you're in the area, this is a good one to come squat in conference rooms.
Pro tip. Love it. So I've heard you say before that you're a big fan of fall golf in New York City. Tell me about what the perfect fall day, the fall golf day looks like in New York. What elements are present there?
Well, sunshine. It can be chilly, but it's got to be sunny. I don't care about the wind, but sunny is great. I like a 50 degree to 55 high. Not too cold, not too hot. So you can wear a sweater, but not sweat to death. I like an early round, but not too early, like a 9 o'clock round, just because the days are starting to get short. So just being able to squeeze it in. The trees have not lost all of their leaves yet. I think that's crucial just to get that taste of fall. I've only played one round of fall golf. Unfortunately, I've just been traveling a bunch and busy with work. So I'm going to try to maybe sneak one in this Friday, but you know, it's kind of 50-50 at this point. So I'm pretty simple, just sunshine, get up there early. Oh, and ideally, like, let's keep the pace of play at a reasonable pace, guys. We all need to finish. Like, we all want to get this in. Like, let's just move quickly. So that's it.
I love it. I was going to ask about food, but we're heading straight for the dirt anyway. So you already know it's coming. Andrew, what have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking recently?
Ooh, so drinking. I like this, by the way. This is a very fun concept. Drinking, it's actually what I'm drinking right now. I've been drinking a lot of matcha recently. That's probably because I just got back from Japan and I drank copious amounts of tea. I do drink tea from time to time, but I've been home for about a week and a half. The jet lag has just worn off, but for some reason I can't break the Japanese beverage kick. So I've just been drinking a lot of matcha. It's good. I feel like it's a nice way to get caffeine without this crazy jolt. So yeah, the matcha is what I'm drinking. And also too much Japanese food eating, which I'll go into that next. So I've been back from Japan, and you would think I've been eating Japanese food for a week, couple weeks. I'd want a break and just stick with American, whatever. No, the Japanese food has continued. I had ramen last night. I think the day before I had sushi. So yeah, I'm eating a lot of Japanese. My brain is still in Japan. I think that's what's happening right
That's awesome. I think
now.
this happens to a lot of people. Like I keep hearing about this. Like you go to
It's just,
Japan and you don't want to come
yeah,
back.
it's just good. Well, first and foremost, I think that Tokyo might be the greatest city on the planet, at least the one that
Why?
I've been to. A couple of reasons. Culture, I think it just has a really cool mix. And obviously, this is coming from an American who doesn't speak the language, so understand that there is going to be a little bit of a disconnect there, but just my vibe, right? And I've lived in New York for 18 years. So, I am a biased New Yorker. Like before going to Japan, I thought that New York was the greatest city. All New Yorkers, we all think that New York is hot shit. That's just what we do. But going to Tokyo, it's massive. I want to say there's like 25,000 people there. It's efficient, it's clean. People seem pretty friendly. All the food is good. Yeah, it just Tokyo reminds me, or it puts this idea in my head of like, if New York got its act together, it could be Tokyo.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can't get there. There's also some interesting things. This is my second time there this October than I went last year. But one of the guys that I went with, he was telling me about how it's so clean there and the fact that there are no trash cans on the street, which I thought was fascinating as a New Yorker because I can't go three steps without looking at garbage. And apparently, I think there was a bomb or something happened in the city and someone lit a trash can on fire or something. And then the city decided, okay, no more trash cans. And I think it's fascinating. It's one thing to instill a law and a rule. Hey, we don't do this. No jaywalking, no speeding, no whatever. But I think there's something very interesting from a cultural perspective when you're able to get a giant group of people to all agree and align on something and say, hey, like we're all doing this. Let's do this together. Like take your trash home. And that's really fascinating. I mean, I don't know, compared to golf, we all know we're supposed to rake the bunker. But I think in other cities and countries and being a New Yorker, I think it's really hard or next to impossible to get a bunch of New Yorkers to do the same thing and agree, like waiting for the light to change. We're insane and everyone's just out for themselves. But I just think that's interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. What about reading?
Reading. It's funny. I'm reading a lot of like weird things right now. I started a couple books that I haven't finished. I'm reading a little bit about like intermittent fasting, which is
Yeah.
intriguing. I started doing it earlier in the year, then I lost a bunch of weight, and I've been able to keep most of it off, but then I stopped because I've just been slacking. I'm reading a book called A Most Beautiful Thing. It's about a rowing team at a black school in Chicago, and it's a, it's just an interesting story. Just the overall dynamic and, being in an elitist sport and this kid's perspective and, the challenges in his neighborhood is just interesting. So those are the things I'm kind of like reading. What was the last one? What is the T again?
Thinking, and this is
Oh, yes.
broad, intentionally broad. What's been
Right.
on the mind?
Interesting. A lot of stuff. I mean, I'm getting old, so my mind does tend to wander and think about stuff. I feel like these days, I turned 42 weeks ago. I feel like
No
these days,
way.
yeah, dude, I'm
You
old. I'm
look
an old
great for
man.
40.
Thanks, man.
I had no idea.
Collagen is great. Retinol is also,
Drinking collagen as we speak. How good
there you
is that?
go. Right. You got to hydrate. face cream and all that stuff. Steal all of your wife's products. That also works as well. The face mask. I do all of that shit. It's good.
It'd be great if I had a wife.
In time.
TBD. We'll keep y'all posted.
She's listening to this podcast right now.
She might be.
But what I think about, I think, and I have a kid, my son's 4. I think a lot about just I think about the state of the world. I think about specifically just because I was thinking about this morning on the train, but how humans communicate and interact with each other and just create and consume content. I find that whole dynamic very fascinating.
Yeah.
Especially being someone, like I went to school for design, but I've worked in advertising and now I work in golf, but I also kind of work in media. So I'm in this weird middle ground where I've had to kind of have one foot in each of these categories at various times.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting, especially when you look at what this idea of being part of the creative class was and what it means now, where everyone is a creator, everyone can make things, which I think is cool. Because I think creativity is part of life and everyone should be able to flex that muscle. But at the same time, like we were talking about this before we started recording, but this idea of quality. And I love the fact that everyone can make something. And I do love the fact that society has grown to the point of applauding this idea of, hey, you made something and it might not be perfect, but you made something. And I think that's cool. But I always wonder about what's next. And it's like, okay, we've gotten here. What is going to be the next step? I also think a lot about just the types of things that we engage with and what we find value in. I think that's interesting. I think some things have become disposable. Maybe too many things have become disposable. And I'm curious in the next, I don't know, year, 5 years, 10 years, where people will find quality in that sense of pause in life as a whole. And I don't know the answer. This is just the stuff that I think about. Cause I find it very fascinating. Like for example, you know, and I'm just like everybody, I like to go on Instagram and scroll around and dive. I don't do TikTok because again, I'm old. But I find it fascinating where I remember being on Instagram when it first started. Mm-hmm. And I remember my very first Instagram photo. And I went to school for design. My minor was photography. So it's always kind of been part of my life. And I remember the first photo that I ever took on Instagram was just a picture. I was on the bus. I used to live in the Bronx in New York. And I used to work for Vitamin Water. And I would ride the bus over the Whitestone Bridge. And it was just a picture of like raindrops on the glass with the bridge and the city out of focus in the background or something. And I put the little filter on it and it had rounded corners and it was like this really crappy distressed thing and you upload it and then it's off to the world. And, you know, I had no followers and it was cool. And I enjoyed that. And I still do. Like, I love I think of Instagram for me as like a photo mood board of my life. Like I look at it that way. Likes don't matter. It just doesn't really matter. But I think it's interesting how it's gone from that. This is a place to share moments of your life, good or bad, depending on how you want to look at it. And now it's turned into this where at least it memes and, you know, people doing weird impressions and jokes and content from the internet or TV being like ripped. And I'm also fascinated about how people are just spending time at home filming scenes of themselves mouthing iconic scenes from movies. I think that's, what is this? Like, this is where we are now. This is how we define entertainment. I just think it's interesting. And again, I'm not looking at it from a good or bad perspective. I'm just like, huh, because you know, things are evolving and I'm just curious as to where it will go next. So anyways, that's what old guys think about the state of the world.
That was wonderful. Enjoyed that. So to spike off of some of the creative talk, you know, I'm curious about your journey. I do want to get into Fair Game, of course, but I'm curious, given that you've played such a major role in quite a number of creative efforts. You probably work for, you know, a couple dozen really talented people, and then SCAD, like, for those who don't know, Savannah College of Art and Design is a place that I have a couple friends who went to SCAD and didn't know much about it 5 or 6 years ago, but I love everybody who I know went to SCAD and they're all super cool and creative. So can you take me kind of from SCAD? What in the world did you want to do back then? And kind of how did you make your way here? What was that journey like?
Sure. I'll go one step back from SCAD. I was very into fine art growing up, drawing, painting. I knew I wanted to go to art school, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I think at the time I wanted to be a basketball player because I was decent. And then I realized I didn't have a strong left hand. So that didn't happen.
Aren't you like 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah, I'm 6'4", yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that checks out. Nice.
And then I remember, I think it was my junior year, early my senior year, my aunt, who also lives here in Brooklyn, she sent me a VHS tape. I don't think anyone's ever told me about it in the story. She sent a VHS tape. I don't know if anyone, do you know what a VHS tape is? I don't know how old you are, man.
We got to go back into the memory banks, but I know what a VHS tape is.
Yeah. But she was like, hey, there's this cool art school that just opened up in Georgia. You should check it out. Like, I know you're into drawing and stuff. So then I put the video in. It was Savannah College of Art and Design. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I think from there, then I was thinking about what do I want to do as a major? And then this was kind of when graphic design was becoming a thing, like a popular thing to get into. And I was like, oh, I want to do graphic design. And at that point, I had never touched a computer for design. I'd never done Photoshop. I didn't know any of that stuff. I just knew how to draw and paint. And then, but at the time, I also loved magazines and I loved fashion and design as a whole. One of my summer jobs as a kid, I worked at this grocery store in Virginia called Winn-Dixie. And I just remember I love magazines like Sports Illustrated, Esquire, GQ. Like, I just love just the overall idea and aesthetic of magazines. I probably, thinking about it now, I don't think I realized that I was just appreciating good design. But yeah, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to school for graphic design. So first year of school, by the way, SCAD was the only school that I applied to.
No way.
Yeah, I was like, whatever, I'm going to go there. I'm just going to apply there and that'll be that.
And it was.
I was a decent student. You know, I was a B+ student, like decently smart. I'd try a little bit, you know, not that I didn't cause too much trouble. So I figured it'd be fine. I didn't study for my SATs. I was like, whatever, I'm going to art school. It's fine. I got a 1080, which is decent. For someone who didn't study, it's like, whatever, it's fine. But I was like, I'm going to art school, so fuck this shit. But first year is like foundational art, so drawing, painting, whatever. And then after that, you get into graphic design. And it's very, I would say my school career was not traditional. It's just, you're just doing work. You're just working. Yeah. It's just projects and deadlines. And, you know, when you're young, you don't really understand how to manage time in the same way you do when you're older and critiques and all that stuff. But I just worked. And then I also had two jobs when I was in college. I worked at Banana Republic. I sold khakis. And I worked at an Italian restaurant called Carrabba's. So I was busy. Like, school was not this party, hang out, chill. It was grind time. And then from there, I realized that, okay, this is cool. I can take this thing and make a career in it. I want to go work in New York City, design studio, advertising, something. I was in the city for my last class, which was like an off-campus program where we went to a couple studios and checked it out. One of our alumni was there. I met him at like some after-hours thing. And then I got my first job working for an agency in Connecticut called Tracy Locke. And I was doing work for Pepsi and like Lipton. And it was good. I mean, I was working for reputable brands. A lot of the work was not super sexy. I was designing coupons, like just basic stuff. But when I think back on those days now, I think I learned a lot of fundamental skills. And I think this idea of like starting from the bottom and working your way up, you don't realize you're at the bottom when you're at the bottom. And I think that's a good thing. When I think about that now, I just thought that was just my job. I was like, oh, I'm just going to design the coupons. Then you realize that you're learning so many fundamental skills where now, like, I'm very fortunate to be like, I can see a project all the way through because I know how to do every step because I've done it and been there. So I did that for a little bit. Again, then I got a job at Vitamin Water, which was, you know, the hot brand at the time. I was part of the in-house team. Did that for a few years. I left there and then I went to go, stayed in the beverage game for a little bit. I went for this brand called Bai. You ever heard of them?
I didn't know. I swear to this day, I didn't know how to pronounce the name.
Yeah.
Like I've seen the logo a million
times. AI. I think it's a Mandarin word. It means pure.
Okay.
But I was the creative director there. So the brand had existed, but then it looked like totally different bottle, different aesthetic, yeah, whatever. And I came in and rebranded it. So I changed I want the bottle to look like this. I want the label to look like this. Like, this is how you do whatever. So I changed all that. And pretty much what the brand looks like today is what I did, which was cool. It was good to see that stick around. And then what did I do after that? Oh, I went back to advertising for a little bit, did a bunch of weird stuff there. I worked on beer commercials and all kinds of stuff. That was fun. And then I got an opportunity to work for a magazine, which is funny because that's what originally got me into design.
Yeah.
A site called Gear Patrol, this like men's lifestyle site. I was the art director there, built the magazine, managed a creative team, did that for a few years. And then I went to go work in the VC world. I was the creative director at an agency called Kavu. And basically they would invest in brands. And then if the brands needed help for marketing and branding, I would kind of like help out with that work. But while I was working at the magazine, and maybe a little bit before, I would do freelance work for Kavu. I did a couple brands here and there. It's so funny. I've done a lot of rebrands that have been quite successful. But I had no equity in these companies, which is very funny. So I did Bai, which sold for a lot of money. I did this protein bar called One Bar, which was this like brand out of North Carolina. Great product. Just, you know, again, using design to kind of like push it forward. I did a brand called Vital Proteins, which is another brand that's out in the market now. I designed that.
Yeah.
What else have I done? I did the rebrand for this prebiotic soda called Poppy that's out right
Goodness
now.
Goodness gracious, man.
I did Once Upon a Farm, this baby food that's on the market right now. There's like a natural medicine brand called Beekeepers Naturals. So I've done a lot of stuff like in CPG. And then Adam Scott called me. So, you know, that's how, and I've loved golf probably for, I don't know, the past 10, 15 years. I played on the weekends, you know, just kind of did my thing. But it was never, I never thought golf and design and branding, I never thought those worlds would collide. So got the call from Adam and the other two guys over here, Ben, who works at Hodinkee, we were in similar circles when I was at Gear Patrol. Met him, I met Eric Mayville, who also comes from the similar world. And basically they told me the vision of Fair Game. And I was like, that sounds fucking awesome. Let's go. So it's been, a year and a half, almost 2 years, and it's been a lot of fun. I think that just, you know, obviously my passion in golf just makes work amazing. But then I think for me, there's so many little things that I've learned over my career and things that I've seen in non-golf spaces that I'm seeing in golf, or that I think could affect golf in a very positive way, like just very smart ways to think about things, ways to portray information, where like user experience, like marketing, all et cetera, et cetera. That for some reason golf has not tapped into that stuff. So when I think about golf, I think about not golf, and then I run it through the filter. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I've been thinking about this very similar thing in that I saw you had a photo on your Instagram with Christian Hafer. Love Hafer. Cool guy.
He's the man.
Great work. Yeah, the whole deal. But there's a lot of talk these days about non-golfers being like the playing the key roles in photo shoots or branding or a piece of writing where that is golf focused, and like the context isn't aligned and it doesn't quite make sense to a golfer, right? And also been talking a lot with the Golfers Journal guys, and a lot of their key photographers when they turned it over from I believe it was called the Surfers Journal to the Golfers Journal, they took photographers who had no experience or interest in golf and they captured it in an amazing way. So it's like, okay, well, what is the thing that allows somebody who's not a golfer to make unbelievable golf content that a golfer can't see? What allows them to see it differently, but also appeal to golfers? And the only answer I can come up with is you just have a really fascinating eye that people agree with or like, or you show it off in such a way that people can understand. But I can't get much better than that. It's like for some creative people, they just have that thing. They have that it. I don't know.
Right. That's interesting. I think you're right. I would build on that and say that a little bit of where that comes from, at least from my experience with golf, like when I think about the golf content and things that I saw growing up, which and I wasn't into golf when I was younger. So it's just things that I saw very kind of like out of my periphery, and even things that I saw while I got into golf. I think that golf was pro and even I don't know, I'd probably not to put golf in this bucket, but I think that sports, basketball, football, and even specifically golf were always shot from a very technical, this is the shot, this is how you get it, this is how you do it, like whatever, like a very, this is how I would describe it, like golf content was very captured from a very Getty Images perspective, like just get the shot. It's press content, and that sense of creativity and storytelling and depth and different angles. I think that other sports and just different facets of life have leaned into those like creative strategies and tactics a lot earlier. So a lot of those things that you're starting to see a lot now with golf, I don't want to say they're all new, because I think if you actually did some research, you'd find that there's probably some of them in there. But the fact that they're becoming more of the norm, where, I remember I was shooting photos at the US Open. I got this really cool opportunity to be the only fan there when I was at Wingfoot, and they just gave me a camera, let me do my thing. And for me, like just taking, and I'm a casual photographer. I'm by no means the level of Christian Hafer. He's epic. But like one of the things that I've always leaned into in my photography is just this idea of interesting composition and negative space and balance, right? That's my design aesthetic. That's how I see the world. And I've always kind of like seen golf that way, where I'm going to crop this picture and it's going to be 80% sky, or I'm going to do this and go the other way, or like little things like that. And you just don't see a lot of that in golf. I think you're starting to see a lot of that now. But I just think that maybe in the 90s or the early 2000s, for some reason, golfers or golf content creators or golf media just didn't need to think about things that way. And then the world has evolved and realizing that there's so much more that can be brought in to make the sport more interesting. Like, one of the things that I love about Christian Hafer's work is that he's technically like a master. Like he knows how to take a photo, but at the same time, he knows where to put himself and how to get the photo. And I love his little, when he goes on his rants on Instagram. And, but I saw an interesting comment where he talked about how when I take a picture, when I'm at an event, and I've been in this position now, and I can see how it happens, is that you've got the little photo press pool and it's like 10 guys and they're all together and they're all getting the exact same photo. And it's like, where is the creativity? You guys are getting the same photo. Like that, there's 12 guys shooting the exact same picture. That makes no sense. So Christian intentionally will say, I'm going to go on the other side, or I'm going to go stand in between the crowd and make something interesting and share that vantage point. So I think sometimes creativity comes from this idea of, I want to run in the opposite direction of where everybody else is going, because I've seen that 1,000 times and it's just boring to me. I think a lot of that is what sparks a lot of creativity. And then what happens is that becomes the norm, which I think is good. And then everyone kind of catches on. And then you kind of have to figure out what's next, which is
how ironic is that? We were talking earlier about, and these are my own words here, not yours. So we're like, people are kind of stretching things to the very end and kind of like picking, gnawing at the bones of content that has already existed. Like you're talking about just on social, how, you know, old movies are being, you know, split into 8-second clips and people are like, singing songs. Yet golf content, for whatever reason, seems to be like the standard is being raised. Not sure why, but it is. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how those two things are very different.
Right. I mean, in some regards, the standard is being raised and then the standard is being lowered. And I think it's an interesting reflection on society as a whole. Again, going back to my own old man rant, but like the other day, people might get some angry about this, but I don't care. But the other day,
that's why we're here. We love haters. Yeah,
we're here to just be a hater. So the other day I was doing an experiment where, you know, and we're a small brand in golf. So, you know, I kind of come into it with very much with this, like, I like to operate under the radar. I like the fact that we're not a big player. I think that's cool to like not be under the microscope and just do your thing and come up. That's kind of how I like to, that's how I like to work. That's actually like how I like to live. That's my vibe. Like, I don't need to scream. I just do my thing. And that's just me. But I was looking at YouTube. Like, I was revising some of our fair game kind of like cover thumbnails on YouTube, right? And I think through these things where like design and like iconography and the font systems, like, because I'm a designer, that's what I do, right? And I was looking through a few brands, like I was looking at, it was all of them. Like, it was Rick Shields, it was Random Golf
exactly
Club.
What you're talking about.
It was like, you know, the Barstool, it's all these guys. And I did a little, maybe I can find it and send it to you, but I made a screenshot of all of the screenshots of the cover photos. Mm-hmm. And they all have this like, or good, whoever. And they all have this giant oversized red typography with drop shadows and bezels. And then they cut people out. They make silos. They put glows around them. And these were the design. This is the stuff that like when I started school and when I became a professional, these are the things that you were laughed at or people didn't take you seriously when you did. These were the things that brands who were extremely lowbrow and were trying to like scream like, oh, it's on sale for 2 for 1, like butter's on sale, like glows. And these are the things that like bad clients would tell me to do to make the designs better. Like, can you put a glow around that? Can you put a drop shadow around that? And I had a moment. I was like, what is happening where this has become the norm? And I think what really happens is this idea of someone does something, someone catches fire, they get traction, they get views. And then people feel like in order to, and this is not just golf, this happens in every aspect of marketing and even life, people feel like in order to get a piece of that success, they have to copy what you're doing. Like, oh, well, you know, so then all of a sudden you pick your head up and you look around and the YouTube aesthetic is now this. And I'm like, this is terrible. Like, this is really bad. I mean, views aside, content aside, obviously like there's own subjectivity with who you like to follow and what you're into, that's fine. But my thing is like, how has golf content gotten to this point where this is our standard? I mean, more people are investing in cameras and quality and hiring designers. But at the same time, like the YouTube design aesthetic is so trash. It's crazy to me, but it just, sometimes that's just how it happens. Cause you don't look up. And it's interesting. And also takes me back to advertising where, you know, you work with brands and a lot of it's the very same type of thinking where markets are changing. People are trying to catch on, drive sales, find relevancy. Oh, this brand did this. We got to do this. And then you get into this whirlwind of copying pieces here and there and here and there, and people coming in and out. And then no one's really being a mentor, or no one's really showing some sense of restraint or some sense of saying, no, we're not going to do that. And then you look up and everything looks like shit.
We were talking about Japan earlier, and I'm big on environment. Like, I think environment is everything. Like, the way that our public schools look like and feel like prisons, and it's just, if you put yourself in a bad environment, you can't plan on great outcomes, you know?
Totally.
And I feel like the thumbnail symptom is, it's due to, it's somewhat due to our human psychology. Like, everything's shortened. Our attention span is shortened. We get more content per have, and it's all incentives. It's like, how do you get somebody to click? If this is how you're making your living, unfortunately, you have to make the biggest, boldest, brightest thumbnail in the world to earn those clicks. The one piece that I also find fascinating is, sometimes on YouTube, like, I feel like we're all YouTube people to a certain degree. It just depends on what color or flavor you like. But I can't remember the name, and I can send you one, but there's this one YouTube platform or whatever, and they do these great short stories. They're like 10 to 15 minutes, and super, the cinematography is really good. And ironically, their thumbnails are incredibly plain, yet you click on, and I'm not going to name anybody, but you'll click one. XYZ, 18 hole match or something. And once you get past the thumbnail into the video, it's 47 minutes of the same stuff. That's fairly low quality,
yet
the thumbnail is, big, bright and bold. That's a weird mix for me, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I think about this a lot too. And again, it's the same thing of, it's so funny. I think about this stuff all the time, but then I don't say it because I don't want to come off as like a hater. It's like, ooh, like, you're just being a hater, or you're hating because like they're getting more views than you guys. Like, that to me, that stuff doesn't matter. I think at a certain point you have to define as a business with where you are and what your goals are, like how you define success. For me, obviously, and everybody wants to get a million views, but If your definition of success is a million views, there are very, very easy things that you can do to get that, where you just got to get someone to click. And once they're in, that's a view, right? The next thing is, I think for me, I prefer this idea of building a relationship with the viewer, your target audience, et cetera, because it's kind of like, you want to do something that stands the test of time, where they're thinking about you when they're not watching your thing, or they're thinking about you when they're not consuming your product, or your product has found an organic way into their life. Like, that's kind of how I like to think about branding and the role that products and brands need to play in people's lives. And I think it's a little bit of a disservice and a little bit of a, you're taking advantage of people's willingness for them to kind of like experience your thing when you don't pay them off with something that you actually like cared about. But again, it goes back to this idea of everyone is a creator now, and that in some ways has a lot of power, and people feel empowered to do that. And I love the fact that people that would not have been able to do and make things in traditional norms now can do that, and they've been able to find some success. I think that's a really cool thing. But at the same time, I don't understand who's watching a 45-minute unedited, poorly shot thing. I don't know. Because it's like, if NBC released that show, you would never watch it. If Martin Scorsese or whoever director put out a film, and that was the quality of the film, and you paid your $17 in New York City for your ticket, you would say, this is a disgrace, right? why would this is trash. You are putting trash on the world. I paid for something. But at the same time, maybe the stakes are different because with golf or golf content or content in general, it's free. You're not paying for it. So if you feel like you've been let down or you don't like it, you just swipe and move on to the next thing. So there's less of a commitment there. But at the same time, I think if you're building a brand or doing a thing that you want to stand the test of time and actually make a difference in the space that you're operating in, you have to think bigger than just a click. But that's a hard thing to do, because if you're thinking on the finite, like, you know, I need to get a million views or I need to do this, that is a very small goal towards a part of a larger goal. And even down to like, no one has been able to quantify what does a view mean? What does a like even equate to? What have we done in society where we have a form of currency that can't be transacted anywhere else, carries so much weight? I don't know. It's wild. Like it's fascinating stuff. You know, like I got to the point where just myself on Instagram for my own, just to shift my thinking, I turned off likes because they don't matter. They just don't matter. Like I'm not posting it for you to like, your like doesn't like equate why I do things. And even down to like people's behavior have been changed where I think, and no one talks about this, but I'm pretty sure that there might be studies around this, but if you post something on Instagram and it could be amazing, beautifully shot, you spend hours editing it, and if people see the likes, and if the likes are low, I think people are making micro decisions before they've even looked at what they're looking at to decide whether or not that is good based on a form of currency that means absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
That's really crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. It's really crazy when you think about it. And,
look, and it's been ever present throughout my lifetime. Yeah. It really has.
I think it's starting to come to the point where people are realizing that, you know, the influencer bubble has popped. Like I saw earlier today, before the podcast, some random person that I follow, and I've got tons of followers, so who knows? She was doing kind of like a post about how I'm not an influencer anymore and I'm going to still be doing stuff, but not, and whatever, whatever, and my mental health, blah, 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 blah. It was like a very long, like 10 slider, just words thing where she was just like explaining why I'm not going to be posting stuff. And I'm sure there was a lot that went into that. I think on one hand, the wins in the category have changed and brands have realized that me giving you a free vacation or me giving you a free whatever doesn't have a lot of value. So I think the market has changed as a whole, and maybe she's been able to find value and purpose in other parts of her life. I think that's cool. But I think just as a whole, you know, the winds are going in another direction, and maybe that direction is to another platform. I mean, it's fascinating. But again, I think a lot of that is also happening on TikTok where, you know, someone says, hey, my thing got a million views. And it's like, okay, it's a video of you, you know, someone fell down and hit their head. Like, congratulations, you got a million views. What next? What's next?
Like, what are you building?
You can't. Yeah. What are you building? What are you creating next? What are you trying to put out into the world? Can you take those million views on TikTok and put them in the bank to feed your family? Like, what, like, it's just, you have to kind of like, you know, step outside of yourself for a second and look at where you're finding this false perception of value and decide, you know, what are you doing? So, you know, that's kind of how I think about things. That's how it permeates myself into, you know, what we do here and how we try to kind of like switch it up a little bit, because at a certain point, if you're just getting caught up in the, like, in the fast follow game, like, you're never going to stop chasing, and everyone's always going to be on to the next. So it's always about like a slow, steady pace. Let's just focus and do things the right way at the right time. So anyways, I can talk about this all day. It's fucking wild.
This is wonderful. What is your wheelhouse? Like, when, as far as Fair Game goes, like, what projects have you really been excited to work on and take a lot of pride in? What does it look like when the two of you or three of you or four of you sit down and say, or five of you, I forgot y'all have y'all added another member. Sit down and say, hey, this is what we care about. This is what we're looking to achieve in the next 2 weeks, you know, 6 months, year. Andrew, this is what we need you to tackle. Or how does that work? What have you really enjoyed working on?
I really love working, just because I've never done it before and I find it very fascinating. I've never worked on an app before. I mean, I just went through the things that I've designed and created, and none of those things are tech products. So I love designing the app, and I think through, like, I think I posted a picture today of just me and Eric. Like, we had a fun moment where we were literally in a room on a dry erase board, thinking about some kind of like flow changes for a button, like one button. And because we want to add like three things, we want to allow people to be able to edit their rounds and like be able to submit. I'm playing only 14 holes, but I want to save it. Like there's a whole logic flow, and it's fascinating to me to think through all of the nuanced steps that you have to figure out to make that experience better and intuitive. That's just really cool. I think people don't give the Zuckerbergs or the development team at the Instagrams and these bigger powerhouse, you know, brands in the digital space a lot of credit, because that stuff is hard. It's really, really hard. And there's so many nuancey steps and little things and considerations and, okay, well, what happens if the user gets from A to B? And what happens if they make it to B to C to D? And what happens if they want to get all the way back to A? Like, there's so many little, it's like a maze. And I love that part of it. So I think that's fun. I make decks, like I manage our Instagram. So I kind of have my hands in all these things, which is very fun. So I find joy in doing a lot of those things. Recently, I've also found a lot of joy in looking at the world, like, cause we post, you know, on Instagram every day, a couple days, whatever. And what I've been able to find the most joy in is seeing what other people are posting or seeing what else is out in the space, and just making the conscious decision of, I'm not going to post that. And I'm not going to get caught up in that shit. And that to me is very liberating. I think it's cool, because it's like, you know what? I think that there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of things out there. And even for me, like, I had to take a step back out of myself and say, am I doing things that are contributing to the noise? Am I doing things that are adding some sense of value and interest and education, unpacking things that people aren't seeing out there, that, you know, the big brands aren't writing about? I think I've kind of really made a conscious decision internally to focus on that, because I find more purpose in that. Like, and don't get me wrong, there needs to be a balance with all things, like with what you eat. I mean, you can eat Cheetos sometimes, but you also have to eat a salad. Like, I think there's a healthy balance to life and with everything. So I'm just trying to strike that. But I've been enjoying more recently this idea of saying no to, like, no, we're not going to do that. Or no, that's cool. That's great. But like, we're not going to get caught up in that. Or this was put out there, and what can we do to communicate that in a way that goes a little bit deeper? Like, for example, the TGL just released, they're starting to drip off the stuff, right? For the teams and whatnot.
Tons of marketing.
And tons of marketing. Money's been spent. It's fascinating stuff. And I think it's interesting. Like, we'll see how the league does. But I saw, just because I follow them, I saw a Fast Company posted an article earlier in the week about the Boston team, right? And the work was done, just as I'm unpacking it, I'm reading the article. All of the design work was done by Doubleday and Cartwright. And if you are a design nerd like I am, you know that that agency is like one of the best sports agencies in the world. So that tells you that, like, as the branding comes out, it's going to be legit, right? But they did Inter Miami. They did the rebrand from the Milwaukee Bucks. They've done a bunch of work for Nike. These guys are legit. So for me, I thought that was really cool to see that, you know, the PGA Tour and TGL or whoever are going to the right people to do the right thing. And we'll see how that plays out. But then I go to golf media. I go on the mainstream websites because I do this every day when I'm looking for news and things to post on Fair Game and our feed, et cetera. And I looked, I was like, no one has written about this. And I understand it's a little bit nerdy, but I think that I look back at all of the live shit and like all of the heckling that people gave them when the teams came out and mm-hmm. all that nonsense. That tells me that like, okay, there is an appetite to learn about just the counter of, okay, some people are comparing LIV to the PGA Tour and TGL and all that stuff, right? But I thought this was the first opportunity to at least start a conversation around how are they taking a differentiated approach to branding, right? No one talked about that. The big boys, which I won't say their names, one of them just posted the logo and was like, here's the logo, what do you think? And that was it. And it just stopped there. So my thing was like, okay, no one knows the story behind this branding. I think it's fascinating. I'm not going to get super nerdy, but I think let's just do a really cool, thoughtful editorial post around who did this, how the work is coming together, what's the perspective, why the frog, why Boston, all that fun stuff, because I just think it's interesting. And even if you're not a nerd about it, I think it's fascinating for people to know, because when you understand the thinking behind things, I think you look at those things a lot differently. So yeah, I did it. I put it out there. It was cool. But I think it's interesting where, you know, there's always an opportunity to go a step further. And for some people, I think this, you know, it's just quick. People are like, get it out quick. Like it's a race, and it's like a race for what? So
in regard to the TGL, the group that's doing the marketing, as you've said, mm-hmm. super high quality shit. Take me deeper into that. Like what does that mean for TGL? What is the PGA Tour prioritizing that LIV has not? Or maybe I'm interpreting that wrong. Maybe the PGA Tour and LIV are using the same playbook. What's your take?
I mean, it's a good question. I don't know who did the work for the LIV teams. Obviously, right. There's a lot of heckling around the names and all that fun stuff. And I also think some of that heckling and hateration sometimes comes from being the first person to do a thing. And that's, you know, you take the brunt of the, you know, you're the first guy to wear pink and then or whatever. And like some people love it, some people hate it. And then it catches on and then it's a thing. Right. So I think there's a little bit of that. But I think that I see more thoughtfulness, and maybe there's some learnings from what like the LIV teams did in terms of how do we roll this out? How do we communicate these teams? How do we tell these stories? How do we involve the communities around these cities? I think a lot of that is interesting. It just shows a little bit more thought. And maybe some of that thought came through for really thinking it through. And maybe some of that thought came through from just learning from the mistakes of, you know, what, you know, LIV did. Maybe, I don't know. It's a different model, but that's marketing 101. Like you decide, or branding 101, you decide who we are, what do we want to do? What's the competitive landscape look like? Where is the white space opportunity? Like everyone's kind of dancing in the corner over here. Like we want to live over here. That's how I would roll it out. Like if someone came to me with a brief for the PGA Tour teams, I'd literally ask those same questions. Like that would be the first 2 weeks of the project. Yeah. What have we learned from this? How can we do better? Oh, we'll do this. We'll do that. We'll do that. So I think it's the slow and patient and strategic way to do things versus let's get it out there and as fast as you can.
Got it. No, that was well done. I'm curious about podcasting. Just mm-hmm. kind of want to hit on this briefly. What you've been running the podcast for a while now. What's your experience been? How do you approach podcasting?
Podcasts are very funny because I tell people a lot, I'm not a podcast guy. I don't really listen to podcasts. There's probably one or two that I listen to. There's one called How Long Gone. And it's kind of like rambly, and they get all their, they talk about like life and bullshit and weird stuff, and it's funny. But I kind of listen to that one mostly for practice for my own podcast that I host, which is very weird. Yeah. I started at Fair Game, and I wasn't planning on being a podcast host, but here we are. I like the, they are really good. Their art of conversation is fantastic. The way that they're able to bounce off of each other and just talk about things I find interesting. So I listen to that for kind of like my own sense of research. But beyond that, it's like, I like our podcast. I don't do it for the sake of, like, I don't see it as a traditional golf podcast because, you know, I think there's too many of them. And I think a lot of people are talking about the same things. Like, yeah. we're going to do a roundup of the news. Like, okay, like what happened this week? What do we think about, you know, Max Homa's new putter? Like, that stuff is fine. I just think there's, again, it goes back to this idea of the galley of the seven press photographers are huddled in the same corner, taking the same photo. And why are you doing that? So our podcast started out with, and it was very similar to kind of like a standard podcast. It was Adam and Ben and Eric. This is like the first thing that Fair Game ever did. It was just around the Masters and how he was getting ready for it and just kind of giving that behind the scenes look, which is cool. And we kind of tap into that from time to time. But I think we learned over time that, again, especially being a small brand, is that it's harder. You can't really stand out because you're just getting, you're another needle in the haystack, right? And there's no real reason for someone to listen to us over whoever. Some other podcast has been doing it for 10, 15 years who has, I don't know, syndication and media rights with some big outlet who has a funnel of big top tier stars. We don't have that, right? So for me, I think the strategic pivot that like I wanted to focus on was, I don't see anybody in golf building community and bringing in other voices and perspectives, and not just from the perspective of like, hey, I want your hot take on like Phil Mickelson, because I also think at a certain point in life that like everyone's opinion on everything doesn't matter. Like I can have perspectives on certain things if I feel like my experience and my background allows me to have a perspective on everything or on the things I'm talking about. But at the same time, I think you have to be very wary on everyone has a take and everyone has a hot take. And, you know, our opinions are like assholes. We all have one. Just because you have a mic and you know how to hit publish on Spotify, that doesn't mean your opinion has value. And I think media has gotten into the point where this idea of hot takes and just having a fiery opinion, it's more about having a fiery opinion versus having a thoughtful and credible or backed opinion. I find that whole world fascinating. I think that, you know, I love the man, but I think the rise of Stephen A. Smith is exactly that. Like,
that's so funny. You
were just the loudest guy in the room. Like, and that's what, but culture, when you look at culture and what culture has become, it's literally that. Whoever is the loudest in the room and who has the most, right, you know, non-traditional, against the grain, hot take. Like, everything is the hot take. Isn't the show called Hot Take? Wasn't it called Hot Take on ESPN? Like,
yeah, it's all sound bites. I mean, again, like going back to, you know, our attention spans. You get 8.5 seconds right on a 20-minute show, like, you did your job.
Yeah,
that's enough.
It's very fascinating stuff. I think we kind of pivoted. And then the other thing that I think about is that being in golf and being a golf nerd, I think sometimes you forget that there's a lot of things and brands and people that you might see as common every day that you've never, you know, met or talked to. Like, I'm actually glad that we're doing this podcast because I've never met you and you're cool. And like, I'd love to hang out. So I think that has a sense of value of connecting people together. So my thing was like, you know what? We're going to do a totally different podcast. I'm going to bring two interesting people on who may have different or similar points of views on things, or they might be makers of things or work in the space or whatever. And let's just bring them on and talk about how they got into golf and what they do. It's kind of like when you get paired up with a rando or they got a golf course, the first hole you talk about, hey, how long have you been playing? What have you been doing? And then the conversation kind of like spirals into other stuff and you just get to like get to know people. So it's not a deep conversation, which I think is fine. It's more of like I see our podcast as a handshake. Like you're just getting to meet someone and putting somebody on your radar. Like that's cool. We've been doing it for a while. I think we're going to keep on that track for a little bit. But I've told myself that, like, again, don't get caught up in the typical podcast bullshit. Just focus on like the why. Why are you doing this? And I'm doing this to like, and I wrote a line down the other day, and I actually just changed it on our, I think I did an Instagram post about a couple of episodes, and then that stuck with me for a while. And then yesterday we posted an episode, and I changed the kind of like, what are we calling this podcast? Like the little like subline. And I think I just put connecting the global golf community, because that's what this is. Like people from all over the world, we're just talking, meeting golfers, different levels. You don't have to be a pro. You don't have to be an influencer. You don't like, we're just going to bring in interesting people doing interesting things. I think for me, that is the filter. Are you doing interesting things in golf? And that could be a wide breadth of things. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, like-minded on that, Andrew. Yeah. That's for sure. I've got one more question for you, and then we're going to do six like kind of quick hits to sure. get you out of here. All right. Last question of the day. More of a personal ask, honestly, is the infamous word balance and what that mean words to you. How do you implement balance in your life, career, family, all the rest?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think balance in its traditional form does not exist. Like when you talk about this idea of work-life balance, there's really no such thing. Maybe just for me, because of the type of work that I do and my background and being used to working around the clock and just creativity, especially design, is one of the things where I can't just clock out at 5 o'clock. It just doesn't work that way. I think about design all the time. Like sometimes I go to sleep and I think, and I feel like I was working and I enjoy it because I'm problem solving while I'm sleeping and my brain is like moving all the pieces around. So you can't just shut it off. I've learned over my career, the designers who did kind of like clock in, clock out were only able to go so far just because that's just not how creativity works. You gotta give it all. I think I'm able to, luckily I'm at the point in my career where work is kind of like a roller coaster where there's busy moments and there's chill moments, but like it's not predictable. So I've learned to like read the water and see the waves and ride the waves when I can. Like I've also learned over the past few years, and I think having a kid definitely does this, is that you have to define some sense of a boundary. I think COVID was good and bad. I think it was good in some ways where it was a little bit of like a wake-up call for everyone, where it was like, what really matters to you? I started working at Fair Game right after COVID because I had that moment of like, do I want to do this? Like, I don't love this. This is not fun. Like, do I want to do something different? And then having a kid. But then the bad part of COVID is that the lines got blurred where we're working from home. When does the work stop? You know, bosses are calling you 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. Like that's just what the world has become. And I also think that, you know, the pendulum always swings back the other way. You have to, it has to go to the extreme to get back to find that equilibrium. And that's just part of things. So I kind of try to read the wave. I think I try to define, you know, as a partner, my wife and I, my wife's is a principal and we have one kid. And so I try to help out in terms of like pick up and drop off and school and all those things. I also want to see my kid. So I see him in the morning. I tend to not see him at night because I work late. So when I get home, he's sleeping. So that morning time is when I get to see him. And then I see him on the weekend. So And then I try to squeeze in a little bit of golf here and there and go to the gym and do some jujitsu or something when I can. So I think for me, the way that I'm able to try to find that sense of balance is it's probably on a, I don't want to say an hour by hour basis. Like maybe it's a daily basis, but I can look at what the next 24 hours looks like, and I know what I have to come to accomplish. And I also know what I want to do, like on the clock, off the clock, and see like, okay, how can I check as many of those boxes as I can? And sometimes you don't, but it's for me, it's always about the effort. There are days, by the way, where, some days I'm like, I just want to go work and I want to work 12 hours and I just grind because I enjoy that. But then there are also some days where it's like, you know what? I'm going to work for a couple hours. I did a bunch of stuff yesterday. I'm ahead on that. That's not due in 3 more days. I'm waiting on some stuff in the development team. I'm going to go hit some balls and then I'm going to go walk for like an hour and a half in the city and just like absorb stuff. I like to also go into just go into stores. I like going into like, stores and seeing their display and seeing what they're building because it just inspires creativity and seeing things a little bit different. So I think that's one of the benefits of being in New York. So that's kind of how I try to find balance.
Wonderful answer. To cap off today, we're gonna do six quick hits called form or function. As a designer, felt that this was fitting. Form or function? Does something look appealing, or does function matter more? Which one are you picking?
I have to
Question number
pick
one.
one. I have to pick one.
You have to pick one. In this scenario, I know it's always a blend. The world is not just black and white,
Oh.
but for these six questions, it is.
Okay, fair.
An outfit, form or function?
Function.
A nice dinner out. Do you want it to look good, or do you want it to be just functional?
Form. Because
Golf course.
you eat with your eyes first.
Yes, you do. Actually, you eat with your phone first, then your eyes.
The phone eats first. You're
Phone eats first.
right.
Golf course architecture, the way a golf course looks or plays.
I'm gonna go form.
Okay. Coffee, form or function?
Function.
Parenting. This is kind of a hard one, parenting.
Function.
Fitness. Last question of the day.
And now, fitness in regards to like overall physique. I just want to make sure I'm answering this correctly.
Correct. Yeah. So fitness, like, do you work out to look a certain way, or do you work out to feel a certain way?
I'm gonna go. That's a hard one.
It is hard.
I'm gonna say function because I think the function, I'm gonna explain why. So the function because if you focus on the function, the form will come. So you should, it doesn't even matter. But then I also think that at a certain point in life, you get to the point where like, sure, you can have abs and whatever, and you can have big biceps, but like if you don't have cardiovascular strength, or like if you don't have those like fundamental things in place, you're not flexible, whatever, you just can't do things. So yeah, I'm gonna go function. You gotta have, look, if you're, even if you're not ripped, like the older I get, I realize that being fit is not about necessarily looking great at the beach. It's about being healthy and being able to like do as many things as you can as long as you can. Like when I was in Japan, I'm watching old guys, like I saw this old guy who was like 65 years old, maybe he was older, like 70, but like old, sprinting up the stairs, like four flights of stairs. I'm on the escalator and he's like bang, 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 bang. And I'm like, that's what you want. You want to get to the point in your life where you're old as shit and like that's not a problem for you. And you can carry your groceries home and play basketball with your kid. That's why you stay healthy. So when you're old, you can still do stuff and not be like, hunched over in a chair. So
Love that. That was a really fun episode. Andrew Haynes, thanks for being here. Let's grab a drink or coffee when I'm in New York. That'd be fun.
thanks for having me on, man. That was fun.